It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, Jeff Greenspan sitting in, but we are relatively concerned. What are we concerned about? There's a genesis to a lot of this stuff, and I think it was, I don't know, human nature, big bad guys wanting to be bad. But what we have here, you know, this campaign, this mission readiness thing coming out of the Pentagon, they're one, retired generals and admirals are going to come around helping local legislators. That are going to be introducing legislation this January. It is going to be there. I guarantee there's going to be on the name of the for the future, and we got to for the future. You know, our military not ready for the future. We got war on terrorism, Islamo-fascist future, Islamo-fascist. It'd be like Rudy Giuliani. I think he got 100,000 every time he said Islamo-fascist. So what happens is they're going to have all this full court press. It's going to be a pressure campaign. Will Gregg says it this way. This most likely foreshadows a pressure campaign in which retired flag and star officers will be deployed nationwide to act as lobbyists for the welfare, bureaucracy, and government education racket. Aristotle famously warned that children raised by society are equally neglected by everybody. By collectivizing responsibility for the upbringing of children, the welfare state abets that kind of neglect. It took trillions of dollars spent on the welfare system and government school establishment to bring about the dismal social conditions lamented by mission readiness. Gregg goes on to say, rather than recommending a radically different approach, the group demands that the government spend additional sums to expand the same policies that produced the disaster to begin with. Where did this stuff have its genesis? When did this concept that we have this overpowering federal top-down, we rule you mentality, where did that come from? You know, it started back in the teens when they created the Federal Reserve and the income tax and this Trading with the Enemies Act that they keep referencing and referencing and referencing to the point you get to 1973. Well, a Senate investigation going, hey, yeah, man, we've been under, you know, constitutional mean nothing for a long time. Thanks for playing. Give us money.
So what in the world happened in 1933? The federal government did not have these powers, period. They didn't have them. Ain't in the Constitution. They weren't able to exercise them before then. So what happened from March 3rd to March 10th? March 3rd, when Herbert Hoover was still president, they didn't have this authority or power. March 10th, after these proclamations of these amended acts and the Emergency Banking Act, they confiscated everybody's constitutionally defined lawful money, and further, by amending the Trading with the Enemy Act, made all transactions in the United States and all people subject to the jurisdiction thereof essentially enemies of the federal government. And therefore, under the Trading with the Enemy Act, they were able to regulate and control. My question for you, Ernie, is, with this William Gregg piece, which I read and is outstanding, how do they track these kids? How do they know who they are? How do they track them? How do they prepare them?
I don't know. Get your number, man. You know, it's one thing. I want to bring this up before you get to that. There was I talked about this in the past, and I think it was Clara Wolf that sent it to me one time. It was a letter from a grandmother to her granddaughter because her daughter had kind of estranged from her, didn't like her mom because, you know, she didn't get her Social Security number, and she felt that, you know, she was ridiculed and didn't get to fully participate in society because she didn't have a social security number. Well, her grandmother wrote this article to her grandchild, and she had cancer and she was dying. She wanted to make sure that her grandchild, if she ever Googled her grandma, this is late 90s that she had put this up, that she would come across this letter. And I remember this, and I remember, you know, forwarding it and so on. I don't know if we have it on Freedom's Phoenix or not. But it was a letter that said, and the only part that I really remember was that the reason I was so much against numbering everybody with a Social Security number was because I knew what it was. Of course, ranchers want to number their cattle. That's what's going on.
And, you know, we could get into the spiritual aspect of that. I don't know if you want to or not. But this is the numbering of humans, the numbering and tracking of humans like assets.
Yeah, and you think biblical time, Babylonian times, the census times, all these guys, they didn't know the problems of doing that?
And what's interesting about it is we were just talking about this during the break. The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which is 1994, the signatories of that agreement, that international agreement, were the ones admitted to the World Trade Organization, I believe, in 1997. The implementing language of that act or of that treaty required that every United States citizen be numbered. And more interestingly, for those of you who are spiritual out there, there's actually a program under the Social Security Administration called EAB, or Enumeration at Birth.
Okay, now, when was this act enacted?
Well, this was a treaty. This is GATT, so that's the treaty in 1994.
Now, explain GATT.
GATT is the implementing treaty for the World Trade Organization.
All right. I remember when I first got started in politics or awareness, economics, my father's company, it's 1988, 89, 90, around in there. I remember they going on about the Uruguay round of the GATT treaty, okay? What this was is they were trying to harmonize all the, you know, because you would have a trade deficit. Yes, America's trade deficit. And this is part of a propaganda campaign that every night they were talking about the trade deficit, this, that. Well, of course, they had to make it easier to understand because this is, I'll give you an example. My father manufactured camping trailers for touring motorcycles. Because it had wheels on it, it's in the same category as like tricycles or bicycles and motorcycles in some countries, you know, going out or coming into their country. Coming here, it would be in with automobiles and tricycles and bicycles, so it may be with toys or something like that. I mean, there was no harmonized code. So they wanted it all the same. So what they did in this argument that they were having, they wanted to create a harmony, and it's called the 1988 Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act. That was, you know, kind of along with the U.S.'s We Rule You part of this. And government's just a gang with a flag, and they wanted their cut, okay? So what they did is they said, we're going to, in 1990, we're going to, you know, bring everything together. And GATT was part of this, and then right after that came NAFTA. What they did is they said, we're going to have all the world is going to have a tricycle is a tricycle is a tricycle, and it's going to be in with, you know, like old wheeled whatevers, and we're going to have this going in and out of every country. It's all going to be the same so that we can track it easier. We can do a little barcode, a little RFID and, you know, thing. They're already thinking of this stuff way back in the day. So that way they can have kind of a value for value, what's going out, what the trade duties are or tariffs are on different products. Because I'll give you an example, a real world example. My father's camping trailer competed with a company called Camperoo out of Australia. Because of the way the trade duties were and such, for him to ship his product to Australia, they had protectionist tariffs and legislation for the automotive industry there because it had wheels on it, 75% duty. Okay, you're going to sell it for $1,000? All right, well, $750 just got added on to it. All right, why? So it can, they can compete. You know, it's this protectionist kind of thing. Coming into the United States, because we love everybody, we're free trade, and that's all excuse for them just to screw us, all right? This is United States trade representatives that would then negotiate a deal and then go work for foreign governments like the Japanese. To bring that same Camperoo into the United States, you know, it was less than the 75%, but it got even better because we had a special deal for 10 years with Canada. If it was disassembled in Canada, they took the wheels off. All right, take the lug nuts off, have the wheels off. It's, you know, we got to assemble it in Canada. So they put the wheels on, and then they would ship it across the border, zero duty. This is kind of the trade things have done. This is part of this GATT round, okay? The Uruguay round of the GATT treaties. And then they wanted to, you know, kind of get agriculture involved and so on. Quit hitting the mic. So they get the agricultural thing going on from Mexico and Central America and South America. You want to know why all of a sudden their entire economy was destroyed and all the Mexicans came here, all the people from South America, all the Hispanic community started coming into the United States? It is because they were subsidizing corn from Iowa that they could ship it to Mexico cheaper and they could grow it because it was subsidized with your tax dollars. And you wonder why this stuff happens. It's social and economic engineering, and don't think they don't know it. They know. Why do they do it? Because it benefits them in some way. We're going to find out a lot more ways it benefits them when we come back. You know, Jeff and I have been watching this since the mid-90s. We knew this was coming. That's why we know what's going to happen.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Declare your independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, Jeff Greenspan in studio here at Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's very nice. It's very nice here this time of year, very nice. Of course, we're still sweating, but, you know, it's a good sweat. It's a dry sweat. And one thing, let's go ahead and summarize real quick. I want to keep doing this because this is amazing information. You want to know where all the, how did this happen? How did this happen? I always hear this. So, well, how do we let it happen? No, they don't let anything. They just do it. Okay? They just do it. And, of course, they sell it under the great guise of, you know, we love you. And, you know, the last time, you know, they really, you know, screwed us and they loved us was with Trading with the Enemy Act. All right? So in 1917, they go, Trading with the Enemies Act, if you're after World War One, there's people made money on both sides. So they go, oh, that's bad. You can't do that. Then they reference it 15 years later. FDR gets in there and says, oh, it's not just people that trade with the enemy. It's everybody falls under what?
Under the amended Trading with the Enemy Act, which was amended 1.5 days after he was inaugurated. So listen to this. And again, going back to the top of the show, write this down. 1973, U.S. Senate Report 93549. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all of their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, which is now 66 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force under by states of national emergency, shaping the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. What in the world was the Senate talking about in 1973? The Constitution was suspended? The procedures and freedoms were abridged? What in the world are they talking about?
I don't know what they're talking about.
Well, as you said, Ernie, the 1917 Trading with the Enemy Act, which seemed reasonable at the time, and it even sounds reasonable today. What did FDR do?
1917.
What did FDR do his first week in office?
He dogpiled on it.
That's right. First thing he did, March 5th, one day after he's inaugurated, called the Congress into extraordinary session to amend the Trading with the Enemy Act, set to repeal the words enemy aliens, so it applied to everybody. The very next day, outlawed the ownership of gold, replacing with Federal Reserve notes. March 9th, passing the Emergency Banking Act, thereby making, and in his proclamation about that act, thereby making all actions taken by him and the Treasury Secretary since March 4th, his inauguration day, legal. Authorized.
It's authorized per, because I just authorized per, which I authorized.
Pretty much.
It's like a circle thing.
Pretty much. But what's important for people to understand is this vision, this concept, this image of America, or at least traditional America that they've had up until 2001 or whatever recently, it never existed. It never existed in my life, in your life, and in my grandparents' lives. Well, Ernie's not that much older than me. But for three generations, this America we had in our mind, the libertarians among us, the conservatives among us, the constitutionalists among us, it was suspended by FDR.
Oh, okay. So now what?
Well, what do we have today? Right? Well, How are we tracking these children?
Well, Gat, you know, comes back and it has all this harmonized stuff. They start to do the trade. We want to go to this global thing. We're doing the North American or the Western Hemisphere thing with NAFTA. And then, I don't know, whatever they call it, like CAFTA or whatever. They got, you know, it's a lot of tuhs, right? So they got these trade acts coming in and they say, you know, to be on, you want to get money from the IMF. You want to be in the, you know, this organization and that organization, WTO and all this kind of stuff. We got criteria. You know, we have a high standard. There are things y'all got to do. And what was one of the things they wanted us to do?
If you wanted admittance to the World Trade Organization.
Which, you know, before we even go to that. Why the heck would we want to be part of a World Trade Organization to begin with?
I don't know, because free trade doesn't require treaties. You just go and trade. But under what they're calling free trade these days, you know, 150 nations or whatever are part of the WTO. And one of the implementing sections in GATT, which was the treaty that established the World Trade Organization and its members, all citizens of member countries had to be enumerated.
Enumerated. Enumerated. What does that mean?
And how did they do that in the United States? They did that in the United States a couple ways. First, Social Security Administration created a enumeration at birth program. Secondly, and if you remember, this was in the mid-90s.
That's what they actually called it, the enumeration at birth
program.
It's called,
you can Google it right there out on Google, SSA space EAB. The next thing they did, and you'll remember this, remember you used to be able to take your child tax deduction without putting their Social Security number in?
Not anymore.
Not since we entered the WTO. That was 1997. And what they're doing today as part of this whole medical insurance, whatever reform, now you won't be able to put your child as a dependent on medical insurance unless you supply the Social Security number. That's passed this year.
I put this in. I put Social Security EAB parent fact sheet. So you have a lot of things on your mind when you have a baby. The main reason you should get a Social Security number is to claim your baby as a dependent on your income tax return. Any child you claim as dependent on your income tax return must be have a taxpayer identification number. I thought they were saying Social Security numbers weren't supposed to be ID or something.
That's what they said when it was passed.
Liars. Regardless of age, getting a Social Security number is just the beginning of the valuable protection and benefits your child may be eligible for in the future, dear young baby-making parent and whatever.
But okay. When you go to look at the Association of all the Automobile and Motor Vehicle Administrators in the United States or the National Association of Public Health Administrators in the United States, what do they actually say about EAB? It's part of a national ID identification program that's required under Homeland Security laws.
You know, I remember here in Arizona, I got to tell this story, and some of you may have heard this before. I think I've told it at least once, but I have two sons that are now 23 and 21, 22. What happened was we go down, our oldest son, now he gets a 15 and a half. Dang it, it's time to get my learner's permit, damn it, okay? So we go down, get them done, sign it up, and here you go. You get your privilege, you know, from the state, because it's a privilege, and that's a whole other thing. But it was just into my other son, he had, I don't know, he's playing football, and he got bad grades right when they changed this. In the previous year, I go, nope. You know, I'm not going to do it. Got to get your grades up, all right? In the time that he had to go to the next semester, get his grades up, the law changed. And it was Mr. Russell Pierce, that's here, Mr. Conservative, Prop 200, and damn immigrants, got to go, everybody's got to have a national ID for the damn immigrants, okay? He used to be director of the Motor Vehicle Department. At that time, he advocated, got passed, was part of this whole thing that equated, that linked up your Social Security number along with your driver's license. Then they said, no, we changed that. You don't have to use a number anymore. It's just a number that's linked to that number. You know, like there's a difference. But what happened was, is I'm going, part of that program also included that you automatically, even when you're underage, a parent signing them for them to get their learner's permit, they're not yet 18, that you agreed to have them on the selective service list, that you on a national list as a young man, that you had to be on the list to be able to be called up for the draft. And I go, Corsair, suck to be you, man, because I ain't signing. You don't get your mom to do it, whatever. You can con her and kind of sling by whatever. I'm not doing it. And we went home. I called Pierce and Karen Johnson, and I bitched up a storm. I'm going, are you kidding me? Because I wanted them to get a real-life example of how this affected. You're going to make me put them, oh, and if you didn't, and even now. You know, my kids never signed up for that stuff. Because what is it? It says, if you don't do it, it's 5-year prison term and $250,000 fine or something if you don't fill out that paperwork. They never prosecuted anybody, but they threatened you. You get it, kept getting it in the mail, and you kept getting it, and you kept getting it, and you kept getting it. One of my sons had to do it in order to go to college. They made it part of his application stuff. Nope, won't process. Can't do this, you know, whatever. You got to fill this out. I'm going, oh, man. This is how we get, little by little, we get enslaved. And what are you going to do about it? I don't know. The first thing you need to do is understand what the heck happened. And we'll understand more when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube. What do I see? A whole lot of people crying. Don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves.
Hancock, and in studio with me, Jeff Greenspan, going over the history of, I don't know, how we got screwed. You know, there's always a lineage. You know, you got to have a flow chart. And this is as good a flow chart as any. Because we're in a situation now to where we have you got to ask the question. Some people are like, you know, how did this happen? Where did this program come from? Who could say no? When did it, you know, and we go back. It goes back to them enabling themselves through references to the power that they granted themselves. And a lot of times they'll immediately have, oh, and that power that we used, that we granted, we authorized the power that we granted because we authorized it. You know, it's kind of a circle logic thing that they do. So now it builds up. We get to the point to where now you have the GATT Treaty, Uruguay round of the GATT Treaty. I remember this, the late 80s, early 90s. If you were watching the news back then, I was paying attention. This is just when I first started paying attention, back when 88 campaign with Bush and Dukakis, and it was all the rage. The number one issue was a flag-burning amendment. I wrap myself in the flag more than you wrap yourself in the flag. I'm a flag guy. That was the big deal back then. And I remember that. It kind of got me aware. I'm as a young man, just had my fourth child, and I'm going, seriously? That's the number one issue of 250 million people is, you know, whether we burn the flag or not? So I'm going, wow. Something is going, you know, they're distraction. There's something going on. So I started to become aware, and I saw what they were doing. And then they said the New World Order. Well, to me, it was like this big ominous thing, you know. It was like, duh. I seen the legislation, Omnibus Trade Combatants Act of 88. There it was. I read it. I saw what they were doing. They were creating a funnel, a conduit, by which the big bad guys got their cut at every level of commerce. And to make it easier for them, they did the GATT Treaty that kind of harmonized all the stuff and, you know, classified everything. Because if you want to know that the government's going to get ready to control something, they got to put a number to it. You know, with this trade thing, it's too much, it's too high, it's too low. We got this, we got the inflation rate, unemployment rate, whatever. They're going to take control of it, and so that they can turn a dial to change the number. So anything that has a government number or value to it, they're going to get control over whatever it takes to change that number. And then they'll just change the definition of what the number is. They do that too. Now, we've seen that. Inflation. They'll go, oh, yeah, you know what? We changed it. Inflation doesn't include fuel, food, and shelter. As long as you don't eat or drive, you know, everything's good. So I'm going, wow, these guys do this all the time. So now they're in a situation to where they create these international organizations and make participation in it dependent on you numbering the children. Because that's what they use as value, collateral. You know, all this debt that we have, what do you think all these people with a Social Security number are? They're a portion of that debt. So my granddaughter just got born. Yeah, just born, 2 months old. Here's your hundreds of thousands of dollars backpack. Got it on you? you owe it. That's why we do the campaign. It's not my debt. How do you indebt a generation unborn or even under age of consent or even just say they consented by, you know, because they didn't slap you? You didn't go into revolution, therefore you acquiesced to the debt. This is the kind of logic that they're using, and they need to get you numbered in order to do it. You know, whether you're a spiritual person or not, you know, in biblical times, you're writing this down. You're going, let me tell you when, you know, the bad guys are coming for what's yours, when they number you. You're used to it. Here comes the number. Yeah, that's where we're at. So how far have we progressed on this?
Well, let's, I mean, the Senate, United States Senate back in 1973 recognized that since 1933, the Constitution had been suspended and everyone in the United States had been living under a permanent state of national emergency. What in the world happened that week, the first week of March 1933? Two things happened in history that are noteworthy. One we know about from our textbooks. One we talked about today on the show. What we know about from our textbooks is Hitler took over the Reichstag in Berlin, declared martial law, and declared himself to be the Führer. What happened in the United States? President Roosevelt revised the Trading with the Enemy Act, making all Americans subject to the Trading with the Enemy Act and all of their transactions and all of their money and all of their property subject to him, the president, and the Trading with the Enemy Act, thereby changing the system of government that we had in the United States. And so in 40 years, we ended up where we were, 1973.
No, the next day or two, they went and they took everybody's gold.
They took the money. They took everybody's gold and made it illegal to own gold, which is lawful money as defined by the Constitution. So where are we today, right? We have Homeland Security, fusion centers regionally throughout the country, tracking us on photo radar cameras, being able to scan our license plates, seeing where we're going, where we're coming, tracking the babies as they're born through enumeration at birth programs. To feed into what William Griggs said today on freedomsphoenix.com, was posted on freedomsphoenix.com. Why do we as human beings need to have a government issue number? It's ridiculous.
Well, because we're collateral.
That's right.
What, weren't you paying attention in class?
So how did this mandatory numbering system start? Oh, but my number's not on my driver's license. That's not a national ID. Your national ID is not a plastic card in your pocket. Your national ID is a data file on file with federal government and with the state. So how did all this start? 1994, motor voter. Remember that, Ernie?
Yeah.
1994, motor voter. Congress passed motor voter law requiring whatever, the ability to register to vote at when you get your driver's license. What else did it do? It created a then optional national driver's registry, then optional for the states to participate. And what did Arizona choose to do? It chose to take the $5 million or whatever it was to participate in the then optional program. What was one of the requirements for participation? You had to conform your driver's license to the national standards that they were then promulgating. And what was the number one thing in there? Mandatory collection of Social Security numbers. So everybody in Arizona and now across the country, and I think there are no more exceptions, your data file, whether you know it or not, does contain that number.
Well, I mean, this is not like a big giant shock to anybody, right? I hope. It's so not a shock to people that they kind of expect it. And to the point that, yeah, what are you going to do about it? And I go, you know, at least understand it, complain. You know, I tell you what it does. It expands the illegitimacy of the government. And that's all I've ever really been focused on anyway. Yeah, I don't care. You know, they can do whatever. Yeah, do it. Knock yourself out. I'm just showing it.
Remember the 1995 deadbeat dads legislation Congress passed?
Mm-hmm.
What did that do? Oh, well, hey, it tracked all the deadbeat dads and where they worked, so in case they weren't paying child support. What did it also do?
It made sure that there was a list every employer to be on.
The National Workers Registry at the U.S. Department of Labor. And this is where E-Verifies, you've heard of E-Verifies, the basic pilot program, and then it became E-Verify that came out of this deadbeat dads legislation in 1995.
And it's always in the name of the children. You know, it's in the name of the threat from outside. They're coming to get us. You know, they're coming right for us. Shoot them. Okay. It's always in the name of some fictitious whatever the heck it is, goblin that they can put up. And now we got, and a lot of this, you know, they can only get so far. I mean, they haven't been able to anger us enough or make us afraid enough or something. So here you go. We got to get you afraid of being sick. We have, you know, and right now in Ukraine, we got like a combination of three viruses causing all kinds of death, mayhem, and so on. And you're going, a combination of three viruses? How the heck did that happen? Didn't we have that before? It was called Baxter coming up with some weaponized version of the avian flu put in with blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm so shocked. Okay? So we are under attack, but it's not like the way you think. We're not under attack to, you know, take property or to take money or that'll come later. We have a philosophy that is under attack from another philosophy.
1996, so we talked about 1994, motor voter, 1995, deadbeat dads. What else happened in 1996? Anti-Terrorism Act required telecommunications companies to all companies to provide standardized hookups to their routers and hubs for law enforcement. Also, immigration reform. What made the collection of Social Security number required? So remember, the states were then had the option to participate in this program out of 1994 or not. 1996, it became mandatory under the Immigration Reform Act. Are you a recent immigrant, Ernie? I'm not.
Now, you see why this show is, you know, where'd you heard this stuff before? You kind of maybe heard pieces and so on. We keep hammering on this stuff to kind of get you in the mindset that this was all done on purpose. It was done with intent. It was done with was it benign?
Foresight.
Yeah.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
With me, Ernest Hancock, from Phoenix, Arizona, in studio with me, Jeff Greenspan. Interesting goodies, is it not? Yes, it is. Now, you know, this continues. It's always under the excuse of something, and whatever they call it, you know it's the opposite of whatever they call it. You know? What was another enumerating effort that they made to get, you know, not only our numbers of who we are, or where we live, and the IRS kind of, we know, you know, where you work, and they wanted to get another database associated with our little number too, didn't they?
Oh yeah, this is rolling out year by year. 1986, immigration reform creates the original I-9 employment eligibility verification. 1994, that was 86. 94, motor voter creates the then optional national driver's registry. 1995 creates the deadbeat dads database, otherwise known as your Employment Eligibility Verification Database, Department of Labor. 1995 is also GATT, which required all member nations of the WTO to uniquely identify all residents. 1996, Anti-Terrorism Act requires telecommunication standardized hookups for law enforcement. 1996, Immigration Reform requires Social Security numbers to be collected for driver's license issuance. That was 96. And remember, these are all implemented the next year on October 1st. 1996, here's where Ernie and I think is getting to. HIPAA, Health Insurance Portability Administration Act, requires medical insurers to provide claim transaction information to the U.S. Department of Health using Social Security number as the unique identifier. What does this mean? This means if you've gone to marital counseling and it's covered by insurance, if you've gone to the psychiatrist or your child's on meds and it's covered by insurance, anything covered by insurance, all those claims transaction, or at least summary of some of the metadata, goes to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and you bet they have the ability to access that now under these new information awareness and total data integration projects. And it keeps going. I got a whole list here of how they keep integrating more and more information about you on one platform.
Okay. And you'll understand let me go ahead and explain this so you kind of get my drift. I owned a restaurant for years. I had absolutely no, I know a lot of people in this audience, you know, what? I didn't give a crap where they came from. Did not care. I from each according to their ability, as far as I was concerned. You know, I was like, you know, they did the job, they could work, they wanted to make widgets. You know, and I wanted them to make widgets. We negotiated a price, and I did not need a third party to get permission for them to enter into an adult contract with me. I need somebody to work in my restaurant. Do you want to work? Yes, I do. You know, I care not where you came from. I know Jeff and I had a different opinion on this, but I'm just, look, because it's an I-9 form, what he's talking about, when they started that. On there, when you're filling it out, I filled out hundreds of these over the years working in the restaurants. I was manager for a long time, so I finally opened my own restaurant. I filled out hundreds of these, and this is what it says. I attest under penalty of perjury that the forms shown to me by this person appear to be genuine to me and that they have a right to work. That just really rubbed me the wrong way. Because you know what? You want to show me you got a right to work? Fog this mirror. You got a right to work. I had to ask Uncle Sam for permission to enter into a contract with another human being. I hated that. Because that is the beginning of all of this.
Well, where do we end up? Where do we end up? There was a presumption of innocence in an American jurisprudence and American culture. Now, under the new war on terror and the new order of how things work in this country, which is what is a terrible tragedy because this is what made us different from every other country ever in the history of the world, was that people were first presumed free and innocent and at liberty to do whatever they wanted unless they didn't, as long as they weren't hurting anybody else. Now you have to get pre-clearance that you're not a terrorist. You're presumed dangerous. You're presumed a criminal. Ernie, can you just board a plane? My dad used to work at JFK in the 60s, in the early 60s. Ready for this? He used to work in JFK in New York City. And I asked him, I said, before 1968, did anyone check anyone's bags? He said, no. I said, well, what about guns? Were they loaded or not? He said, the most the stewardess would ask is, do you want me to check it with the coats or put it overhead? They could have been loaded. No one cared. No one looked.
I remember in the 70s, I think, here, you were in Sky Harbor. You used to have Southwest Airlines. I think it was Southwest. They were like terminal, you know, nothing. It was out there. You walked out on the tarmac at a billion degrees and went up the stairs into the plane. And, you know, nobody did anything. You know, I think you went through a metal detector before. So I remember a friend of mine in 1980, 81, 80, worked for Eastern Airlines. And when you went from Washington, D.C. to Boston or Boston, New York, they had this express shuttle thing. You got on the plane and you paid on the plane. They didn't know who you were. It was like getting on a trolley. You know, all of that. The kids now, as they're being wanded at 3 years old, now take your shoes off of the nice man, stick an old anal probe. You know, you're going, you know, seriously? Is this what we're training our kids for? They don't even know what it used to be.
And yes, it is what we're training our kids for. That's where all this identification's going. 1997, Telecommunications Reform Act. Get ready for this, folks. All new cars made and all cell phones. This is in the 1997 Telecommunications Reform Act. All new cars or new cell phones made or sold in the United States on or after October 1st, 2001. Had to have two-way communication devices in it.
Wait. Say that again.
1997 Telecommunications Reform Act. All new cars or new cell phones made or sold in the United States on or after October 1st, 2001 had to have two-way communication devices in it.
Wow. You know, the one thing that's interesting is we just had a story up a few weeks ago where a guy had his car carjacked and the police turned it off. They're chasing the guy, and all of a sudden the accelerator went out. Oh, see, isn't that a good thing? We can turn your car off because we love you.
You know, the funny thing is, conservatives, if you will, conservatives always opposed all this. This was the Clinton agenda. All this stuff was the Clintonista agenda in the 1990s and the Democrat agenda ever since the 1930s, since Social Security Act was first passed. And now conservatives and Republicans are embracing these things in the name of security. Well, there is no greater security than a free people. That is the greatest security. So when you take that away, you're already staging down one security level.
Hmm. And where's the end result? We got a few minutes here. I just want to give you a bottom line here. We're going into what?
Do you ever see the movie The Lives of Others about the East German Stasi? I mean, this is where we're heading, folks, and this we're heading on a bullet train. Here's the laws passed in the 1990s. They can they monitor the data packets going over your cell phones, going over your computers, going through your IPs, going through your cell phones, through your home phones. You have to, all of your health insurance information goes to a database, all of your residence information. And don't think that this isn't gun registration. National ID is gun registration, because if you have to put a solid form of ID with a unique identifier and proof positive of your domicile when you give a gun when you make a gun purchase, and we already know from the NRA battles from the 90s that those records are kept and not discarded. This is gun registration, and no conservative is telling you that, because they all want national ID. And you know what hinges on it? Billions of dollars in IT contracts and information technology contracts. Everybody wants a piece. Because where's the economic value add in our country? Where it's coming now is the faster you can move this country towards a security state and all the hundreds of billions of dollars in contracts that go along with it.
Mr. Jeff Greenspan, you, big on immigration. So how are we going to take care of that?
Well, I like the Ron Paul solution that he elaborated during the campaign. Number one, secure the borders, for crying out loud. Stop the leakage from coming in. Number two is when people if someone's picked up in a criminal offense, deport them like they used to do. And number three, if they otherwise come into contact with government, deport them. You know, so does this have to be a $100 billion overnight operation? That's ridiculous. Do we have to number every American citizen in order to catch the few illegals? No. Just do what we've always done. It's worked, and we'll fix the problem.
What about checkpoints on the highway?
Well, you know I oppose that. You know, we're getting to the point where we're going to have to swipe our IDs to get to walk down the street. It's ridiculous, and it needs to stop.
How?
Well, people first have to understand. They have to understand this background infrastructure that's been built up to capture every dimension of your life.
Income tax, where you're working, where you get your money, how you're spending your money, who you're contributing to. If you want to receive some of that benefit from somebody getting a write-off, whatever, then you got to register your charity with whatever, 501, blah, blah, blah. Okay, your church or this or that, then you fall under that. Okay, then we have HIPAA. Your medical records are all, and it's privacy protection, because we love you.
Except for the government. except for authorized personnel.
Yeah, well, and them, okay, the guy with the shiny badge. Then you have the Social Security, all
deadbeat
the money.
Dads, motor voter, anti-terrorism act, immigration reform, telecommunication reform. It just goes on. Now we have Know Your Customer banking, which Republicans always opposed since the 40s. Now they passed it. Aviation and Transportation Security Act 2001, which screens you and has your information about you. Real ID 2005. $200 million for Department of Education to track college students. 2006.
Let me tell you this one before we go to the end. We got just 30 seconds. I'm going to tell you this one. A friend of mine told me, he said, now he has his financial officer, big money guy. He has to go retroactive to 2003 and report all precious metals in all foreign banks from back to 2003 because they passed a rule retroactive. Want to know where all the metal is retroactively? Why? Because that's the first step to taking it away. We'll see you tomorrow.